Good morning. Always good to be here with you. I always think of, there are things that people say that stick with you for the test of time, it seems like. And it's interesting being around people who may be struggling with some kind of memory issue and the things that they hold on to, and the things that they remember, and the things that were important to them tend to come out, along with sometimes things that they've probably been trying to discipline themselves not to ever say again. And so there's a lot of anxiety that I have over that, if that time ever comes, because there's a lot of things that cross my brain that no one ever hears. And then there are things that cross my brain people hear that I wish they had never heard. And so there's that aspect. But there are things, right? The songs, a lot of the songs that we sing, especially this morning, I don't need the book, right? I've sang them all my life. In fact, if someone says any lyric that's remotely close to that song, I feel the need to finish it, at least in my head. And if I'm in Bible class with students, they probably get to hear at least the first verse or so. But that's what the point is. As we spent so many weeks in Psalms a few months ago, we kind of connected to that, that there's a reason why those jingles, we might say, those things that we latch onto, especially in our time of need. And so a lot of the way the church is built, our worship service, is to be mindful of the things that God has done. One of the keys to being at the will of God, Thessalonians says, is to be grateful. There's a reason why God shows up and goes, remember who brought you out of Egypt. Remember who has done all these things for you so that you will be made aware that I'm here. I think most of us would say there's a God, and if we read the scriptures, that he's ever present. He's everywhere. The difference is our awareness of that fact and that idea. And that's what all of this has been done, so that we will have an awareness. The sun acts a certain way. The clouds act a certain way. The weather acts a certain way, the point that we've been able to get to the point where we can measure it. And we can look at things and go, that's abnormal. That's not the way it's supposed to be, or normally conducts itself, so that it points to God. Think of the physical things that Jesus did, the miracles that we look at and we go, that's impossible. And he says, you're right, outside of God. We're able to see miracles. That's a miracle because it's outside the norm. It's not what usually happens in those circumstances. And so all those things point to an awareness of God so that we'd be made aware of who he is. Acts 17, that whole sermon there that Paul delivers, is about awareness, this unknown God that you are unaware of. Well, let me tell you a little bit about him. Because he has done all these things so that you would acknowledge his existence and choose him over anything else. And that will streamline your life, simplify, maybe not make easier. There will be tribulation, there will be trials, but take heart, I have overcome the world. And so seeing your faces, witnessing that you are here and we are together, is to encourage us in the face of even the worst moments in our life. You have survived all of your worst moments to this point. So, hey, all right. If you can't walk away, there's your encouragement. And we believe, as a body of believers, that it's because God has been with us in those moments that we have been brought through. And his presence is everywhere. Even to the unbeliever, the fact that you're able to survive your worst day is really, in a way, pointing to God so that you might see him and be aware of him. And so as we continue to think about the victory appearances of Jesus, realize that those appearances are for those who see him. That they would be encouraged, that they would be motivated to continue in this process. These are people who wanted Jesus to be alive, desperately wanted Jesus to be alive, and yet had what? Doubt. And they needed that doubt to, in some degree, be removed to the point that they would all die deaths that we would not be jealous of. And so understand that really the point is to encourage these disciples to gird themselves up, almost quite literally, as we'll see in John chapter 20 and 21, for the things that they are about to suffer, so that people will see their suffering, their response to that suffering, and turn to a God who loves them preciously, radically, and really scandalously in comparison to many things. Think of, you've got Caesar who's saying, I'm your Lord, and if you don't think that, I will punish you to the point that I will make you say it. Versus a God who says, I'm Lord, and you have all of these invisible attributes that point to that. I don't want to have to punish you when you finally believe. I want you to receive all the rewards and benefits of belief now so that you can be pushed forward to the greatest reward of being aware of the presence of God here and in the time to come. So as we've been doing, we talk a little bit about John 20 is where we're going to be at, John 20 and 21, and then we'll be making reference to Romans 8. So if you want to stick your thumb in both of those, we'll be kind of flipping back and forth. So first of all, we see the victory over doubt. In John chapter 20, verses 24 through 21, we see this victory over doubt as we talk about Thomas and the things in that text. Verse 24, picking up where we left off last week. Now Thomas, one of the 12 called the twin, was not with them when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, we have seen the Lord, but... Those are important words in any text. We've been studying Romans in our Bible class, and there are a lot of uses of that word. And, you know, those first few chapters is, hey, the world's a dark place. There's sin. There's all this awfulness. Here's the sin spiral that brings down society and our relationship with God. But because of what Jesus did, you don't have to suffer that consequence, that you've been brought up. And so this is a big word here in the text. Don't miss that. But he said to them, unless I see in his hands the mark of the nails, place my finger into the mark of the nails and place my hand into his side, I will never believe. Think about that word, never. That is a huge statement. I will never believe unless I see his hands, his feet, and the scars, the holes where those nails were driven, where the punishment was endured. I will never believe. Verse 24 through 25, we see this denial, right? All the disciples kind of take a turn on this this wheel. And there's a couple of them that get really the bad rap because we get their names. I'm not sure why some of the names are withheld, right? To protect the innocent, I don't know. Because they're not. I don't know, it's about the innocents. But they get the name called, right? 8 days later, his disciples were inside again and Thomas was with them. Although the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, peace be with you. When's the last time you looked at doubt as an opportunity? I think the way we think about doubt reveals, as Paul will tell us in Romans 8 in just a moment, how the flesh, it's kind of a measuring stick of the flesh. I'm not saying that doubt is the measuring stick. It's our attitude towards doubt. If we allow doubt to make allow us to make statements like, I will never believe unless there's some physical aspect that I can see, versus what the man says in Mark 9, right? I believe. Help my unbelief. There's an attitude. There's an opportunity in that statement. I believe. I confess that I don't have the level that I wish I had. But I also confirm that you can do something about that. You see, it's not the flesh is winning, it's not dominating, it's acknowledging that there's a fleshly side to me that has a hard time wrapping my mind around this. And I would say to a large degree, it's going to be a lifetime issue, something we're going to deal with for the rest of our life because we are in the flesh. There's an aspect of that, but there's also an aspect of putting that to death. And it's like we got to weed out the flesh, right? We've got to acknowledge it. What are those people who are addicted to a substance have to do? What's the first thing, right? I'm Travis Creasy, and I'm fill in the blank. It's the power of confession that we see. Let's look at Romans chapter 8, verses 3 and 5 to kind of better drive this point home than I could. In verse 3 of Romans 8, for God has done what the law weakened by the flesh, our doubt could not do. By sending his own son in the likeness of sinful flesh and for sins, he condemned sin in the flesh in order that the righteous requirement of the law might be fulfilled in who? That's important, that it would be fulfilled in us. And so there's going to be this war that continues to go on. And we oftentimes look at the war as, oh, that's a bad and negative thing. But really, the war is proving who can win. The struggle is proving who we really put our faith in and our trust. If there's never a battle, if there's nothing ever that we struggle with and dealt with, then God really can't triumph over much of anything. And I believe God's triumphant over everything. But it's because there's this doubt that we have that He goes on to conquer. But we have to look at doubt as an opportunity. And that reveals to us how much the flesh is in charge of our life. And so doubt is going to be a part of life to some degree. Verse 6 of Romans 8, to set the mind on the flesh is death, but to set the mind on the Spirit is life and peace. If you notice the last 2 weeks when Jesus shows up, what He says to His disciples? Well, if not, John chapter 20 and verse 26. 8 days later, His disciples were inside again and Thomas was with them. Although the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Now, if Jesus is the life, He's alive. They couldn't lock Him out. He shows up. He didn't come through the natural way. And so there's something spiritual here that's working. And he says, "I'm not here to scare you." And then He goes on and basically in the same statement, "There's nothing for you to be afraid of. Do not fear that which can kill the body, but kill the body and the soul." So He shows up and says, "There's peace and life even in the face of your doubt, even in the face of your questions." It's okay to question as long as we all understand and have a commitment to who has the answers, who can answer those questions. And it's not like we're demanding He's going to answer them when we want Him to answer them. We've all had that prayer, right, where we prayed and we didn't get exactly the answer we wanted, or maybe there was just radio silence or it felt that way, and you just keep on trusting. John chapter 20, verses 27 through 29. Then He said to Thomas, "Put your finger here. See my hands. Put out your hand and place it in my side. Do not disbelieve, but believe." We have a God who wants reconciliation. Wants reconciliation. We all have a relationship today. If you've lived long enough, you want reconciliation so bad. And maybe you can sit there and go, "I've done everything on my end to be reconciled to this person, and they just won't have it." That may be the closest we may ever feel to what God feels. Because God has done all the things He's done, from the sun rising the same way to the suffering, so that we could be reconciled to Him. Don't disbelieve, believe. Romans 8, verse 7 through 10. "For the mind that is set on the flesh is hostile to God." Peace. I've come to give you peace. You don't have to be hostile towards me. There's nothing to be fearful of, for it does not submit to God's law. Indeed, it cannot. Those who are in the flesh cannot please God. You, however, are not in the flesh, but in the Spirit. If in fact the Spirit of God dwells in you, anyone who does not have the Spirit of Christ does not belong to Him. But if Christ is in you, although the body is dead because of sin, the Spirit is life because of what? Righteousness. The righteousness of God brings life with it. They couldn't keep a righteous man down. And because they couldn't, we now rise and live with Him. We can be a living sacrifice. The life of the Spirit is a life of belief and being blessed by that belief. And we see in chapter 21 the victory over failure, right? Failure is only a failure if we buy into it, if we look at it as final. There's, through Jesus, there's always a comeback. He's coming back. He's got eyes like fire and a tongue like sword, right? We were talking this morning in Bible class about you know, sometimes it's really easy to kind of lose our respect for God because there's the language there is like, He loves us and He wants to be in this relationship with us. And then I think about Revelation where John, the one whom Jesus loved, Jesus shows up and he says, I became like a dead man for fear and respect and admiration for who Jesus is. It's revealed the other aspect of Jesus. It's like, okay. And remember, this is one of those guys that's like, call down fire and sons of thunder. You know, how big and bad are you now? Jesus has showed up. It's this response that there is no failure if we're seeking God and we're receptive to His existence in our life. I think again of Mark 9:24, I believe, help my unbelief. If you look at John 21:3-23, we won't read all of that. We will make our way there. But in Romans 8:11-17, we see that bore out. If the Spirit, we read that, just if the Spirit of Him who raised Jesus from the dead dwells in you, He who raised Christ Jesus from the dead will also give life to your mortal bodies through His Spirit who dwells in you. So then, brothers, right, this elevation of us from Romans 1 where it's like, hey, sin will destroy you and you will receive the just punishment of that, to now we're in Romans 8 and he's like, brothers, you're not debtors, not to the flesh, to live according to the flesh. If you're not debtors, that means we were at one point debtors. You're not anymore. For if you live according to the flesh, you will die. But if by the Spirit you put to death the deeds of the body, you will live. For all who are led by the Spirit of God are sons of God. There may not be a greater name that I call than son. Son, don't do that. Sis, don't do that. I have care for you. And I want you to understand that. Now, there is the discipline that's necessary from time to time. But I really am not looking to punish you any more than I have to. Your sons, your brothers, for all who are led by the Spirit. For you did not receive the spirit of slavery to fall back into fear, but you have received the spirit of adoption as sons, by whom we cry, Abba, Father. The Spirit Himself bears witness with our spirit, and we are children of God. If children, then heirs, heirs of God, and fellow heirs with Christ, provided we suffer with Him in order that we may also be glorified with Him. I believe, help my unbelief. We see the master of creation in this text. Last week we talked about the aspects of creation. Now Jesus shows up and goes, administers and illustrates His control of creation. Romans 8:19-23. For the creation waits with eager longing for the revealing of the sons of God. Sons of God. Us. We suffer. We long along with creation. For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of Him who subjected it in hope that the creation itself will be set free from its bondage to decay and obtain the freedom of the glory of the children of God. For we know that the whole creation has been groaning together in the pains of childbirth until now, and not only the creation, but we ourselves, who have the first fruits of the Spirit, groan inwardly, as we wait eagerly for adoption as sons, the redemption of our bodies. How do we see this? John 21, beginning in verse 12. Notice the power. Jesus said to them, come and have breakfast. Now none of them disciples dared ask Him, who are you? Actually, I'm looking at verse 5 through 6. Jesus said to them, children, do you have any fish? They answered, no. He said to them, cast the net on the right side of the boat and you will find some. So they cast it, and now they were not able to haul it in because of the quantity of fish. He is showing this control over nature. Verses 10 through 11. Jesus said to them, bring some of the fish that you've just caught. So Simon Peter went aboard and hauled the net ashore full of large fish, 153 of them. And although there were so many, the net was not torn. And as I said, come have breakfast with me. We see echoes of the Passover. Here's all these reminders, all the things they did before the death, burial, and resurrection until my kingdom comes. Now we see that replayed after the resurrection. I told you. I told you. Now think about all of the baggage they've all got. They've heard those words. You deny me before men, I will deny you before my Father. And here Jesus is wanting to fellowship with them. Remember that first time you experienced that? When you came to the realization that here's this God who has all the evidence in the world to have nothing to do with me, and He longs to fellowship with me. And He comes after me. And there are times where I'm like, I wish You'd just leave me alone. And He just loves us, and He just, I'm going to keep showing up. You're going to have to deny me every time. Come have breakfast with me. We see echoes of the Lord's Supper, chapter 21, 12 through 13. Jesus said to them, come have breakfast. Now none of the disciples dared ask Him, who are you? They knew it was the Lord. Jesus came and took the bread and gave it to them, and so with the fish. It says here, this was the third time that Jesus was revealed to the disciples after He was raised from the dead. What does that tell me? He's not done resurrecting and reconciling. John wants you to know He's not going to leave you be. He loves you, and He loves you too much to leave you where you're at. We see this reconciliation with who? It's about to follow up. Peter. I got nothing to do with that man. Three times. Jesus says, that's not enough. No's not an answer for me. I'm coming after you, and I'm going to have this time with you. Remember Romans 8:12, brother, brother, brother. He isn't done resurrecting and reconciling. He's still rolling stones even to this day. Verse 15 through 17. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? And he said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, feed my lambs. He said to him a second time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, tend my sheep. He said to him a third time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And hopefully we've all experienced this at some point. Peter was grieved because he said to him a third time, do you love me? And he said to him, Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. How does Peter know that he knows everything? Because he's the one who told him, hey, you're going to do this three times. All the evidence had nothing to do with him. Peter heard those words, you deny me before men, I'll deny you before my Father. He's heard those words. He knew that this outreach of Jesus was embarrassing. It grieved him. I know my sins. I know how lost I am. I know how I've denied you. And yet Jesus shows up and says, I'm coming after you. I want you. What's it like to be wanted? I hope you feel that here at this church. We want you to be here. We desire your presence here because you bring an aspect of God that no one else can. It's not cookie cutter, right? We all have to bring our experiences and where God has shown up. And sometimes we want to compare just like Peter does with John. Well, what about him? What's going to happen to him? This doesn't sound great to me. I'd like to know that his life is going to be harder than mine. I'd like to know what he's going to suffer for you. Hey, you've got things that you've got to do. We're not quite done here just yet. John 21, 18 through 23. Truly I say to you, when you were young, you used to dress yourself and walk wherever you wanted. But when you were old, you will stretch out your hands and another will dress you and carry you where you do not want to go. That's comforting, right? We just all want to hear, hey, you got to go do through some things that you're not going to want to go through. This he said to show by what kind of death he was to glorify God. Notice that word, glorify God. See, glorifying God involves suffering. Paul encourages us in 18 that the suffering is won't even bear in comparison. In other places, it's a momentary light affliction. And I go, Paul, I'd like to have a word. And then I read the things that he suffered. And I go, I'd rather not have that word anymore. Because it's not a comparison game. It's what we're called to be in following Jesus. Romans 8, 18, 28 through 30. We can look at those together. And we know that for those who love God, all things work together for good. See, Peter was going to learn that the denial grew him up a little bit. That the saying of, you have the words of eternal life, although correct, there was still room to grow. And that's to us. There are people in here that may have been a Christian longer than I've been alive. Awesome. Stay committed. You're such an example to us. But there are still things to learn. There's a process that continues to move along that we are a part of. Romans 8 starts with, there is no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. If we believe that, there is nothing on earth that will keep us away from Him. If we truly believe that all I have and all I need, I love in Hebrews when he talks about the love of money. We focus on the love of money part, but the last half of the verse is be content with what you have. And he goes on to say, because Jesus said, I will never leave you and never forsake you. What's he saying? If you've got Jesus, you've got everything. So when did Jesus stop being enough? When did that happen? That's a big question. It's an important question that we have to answer. See, Romans chapter 6, verses 3 through 4, he talks about being raised in Christ. The justification has been put on the table. When we're baptized, we receive what's already been bought, what's there. It's like when we come up here and we get this stuff, it's there. Somebody else prepared it. We just benefit. We get to come pick it up, take it, and use it to be reminded of it. But in that moment, sanctification begins. The process starts. It's a continual death of that person that we choose the spirit over the flesh. That's Romans 8. We are reconciled. Think of one more example from John chapter 21 and verse 7. They see this figure on the beach. And John says, it's the Lord. And what does Peter do? There's a lot of reasons why Peter should have avoided Jesus. I would have avoided him. I'm not getting off that boat. I'm going to be like the last dude off. Because I don't want to... I've seen, if I'm Peter, the disappointment of Jesus. I would imagine that's difficult to get over. I've seen disappointment in my mama's eyes. I've seen disappointment in my wife's eyes. And I don't enjoy those moments. I can't imagine the creator of the universe. I told you that was going to happen. You see, Peter's response is the right one. I'm not saying the disciples are wrong or sinful in getting the boat in. Somebody's got to, right? It's just like a gut reaction. Boom, I'm going. That's who I want. I don't care who's in my way. They're not going to stop me. I don't care what obstacle's there. But then right around when Jesus tells him again what's going to happen, I don't know about that. I don't want to go do that. Jesus says, I know. That's what I'm telling you. You're going to go do things you don't want to do. And so there's a commitment level there. But it's in our suffering that people truly see what Jesus means to us. That's not fun. That's not something that I'm just longing for. But that's what it's meant to be. So this morning, we probably have varying degrees in this room. There's enough of us that we're at different places in Peter's walk with Jesus. Right? Maybe you're like, man, I can't wait to dive in the water. I can't wait to just be committed and I just want to go to Him. Maybe that person that's in the midst of suffering and you're going, Lord, I don't know about this. I didn't really want this. But then his response is, I'm going to be with you in it. That's the beauty of it. Helps you to begin to rely on me. But wherever you are, understand that we have a God who is tremendously interested in reconciliation. And that wherever you're at, there's a process that was created by Him, not me. Not by some smart person out there, but by Him that makes you acceptable to Him. In whatever place you are, we would love nothing more than to assist you in that. I may not have the scars in my hands and my feet and in the side that Jesus did. I've got plenty of scars that I've gained by my own stupidity. I've got plenty of those. Yeah, they're great stories. But they're nothing like the scars that He took so that we can be reconciled to Him. So why not get the most use out of them today? And we would love to assist you in whatever that looks like in your life. And we're going to sing this song of encouragement right now to do just that, to encourage you in your walk wherever you are. If you've not given your life to Jesus, why not today? It'd be a perfect time. The reconciliation to God is open 24/7, even more so than Walmart, right? And so let's do that. Join with me now as we sing, and let's reconcile ourselves to God in whatever way necessary this morning.